Hold it right there. Don't touch that podcasting control lever. Coming up next in our show.
Okay, so welcome again today to another podcast with Planet Hoops. Today on the line, we have a very special guest, another special guest of many to come and many that we've had so far. So today's guest is Brian McCormick, and Brian has quite a few websites. He has a special passion for youth basketball and the development of the game at the younger grassroots level. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today, and Brian also has another couple of interesting projects. We're going to let him talk about that. One of them is the 180 Shooter Training Program, which is very unique and interesting, and we'll let Brian talk about the URL websites for that. And he also has a blog that's more related to the NBA, but it's the BMAX blog that ran for the Basketball Maven. So very interesting information. Brian's obviously a very good writer, if you've ever read any of his stuff. So we want to welcome you to the podcast today, Brian. And how's everything going?
It's great. Thank you for having me.
Great. Can you tell us a little bit about your background? How you got into basketball? Yeah, sure.
I started coaching when I was in college. I started coaching between high school and college. I was an exchange student in Sweden, and I played on the Division II team in my town, and then I ended up coaching a team there, the under-15 boys team in the town. And then when I got to college, I started with Special Olympics, coaching with the Special Olympics program on campus at UCLA, and then got involved with, you know, coaching volleyball, girls volleyball and basketball with 5th and 6th grade girls, and then I moved to AAU, and then I moved to high school, and then to college, and then professionally overseas. So over about 5 years, I kind of jumped a level every year. So I've coached a lot of levels in a lot of places and worked with a lot of players through the last dozen years, I guess.
Like on your about me statement on your blog, it's I'm a basketball coach, trainer, author, entrepreneur, which is great. I think that's fantastic. And your goal is to improve the way that we train and coach youth basketball players. That's one of my passions as well. Maybe you can talk a little bit about why you feel that, and from my readings, I know that how you feel, but why you feel that most coaches kind of have it the wrong way with developing young players. I'll stand corrected if you correct me, but that's kind of what I get from you is that there's got to be a better way and there's a better way to work with these young athletes. How did you get really interested in developing and training youth players?
I guess just from being involved, when I coached pro teams overseas, I was working with the youth teams as well, and when I coached when I was coaching college teams in the States, like junior colleges, I was still working with kids teams. So I've always stayed kind of plugged into what's going on with youth teams. And the more I've read and studied youth development and talent development and the way that other sports approach sports and the way different federations or countries approach sports development, I guess it kind of shaped the way that I look at coaching and basketball development. The book that kind of covered the crossover, the new model for youth basketball development, it actually started as something else. And the more I researched and started writing, it kind of took shape, in this way. And that it eventually was published. But it started out as a kind of a player's development workbook and then ended up being a lot of different things. So, I guess biggest thing is, also looking back on how I was coached in different sports and the difference between what I did and what's going on now, and just looking at the way some of the kids that I trained, the way that they were coached, and you know, the overall expectations and the system and the time commitments and the and so forth that were placed on players. My initial book was kind of a reaction to what I was seeing when I was working with, when I wrote the book, I was mainly training players, and I was training 25 to 30 players a week. So it was kind of, hearing their stories and their parents' stories and talking to them and so forth was kind of the background that led to the first edition of the book.
With the crossover movement, it's obviously not just a book, because you're trying to have a movement, and you do have a. Maybe you can talk about your website, the URL of the website where people can go and find information on improving youth basketball, and then delve maybe a little bit more into some of your philosophies as with regards to youth basketball.
Sure. The URL is thecrossovermovement.com. I'll spell that as one word. And the site now, my goal with the site is more or less to provide information. One of the things that I've always done since I first started writing, when I was writing for Basketball Sense magazine, back in 2000, 2001, I've always wanted to write in a way that made people think about what they were doing, whether they agreed with me or disagreed with me. I just want coaches or parents or players or whoever's reading the material. I wanted to force them to think about what they're doing and evaluate. If they evaluate and decide what they're doing is the best thing, then so be it. But so I'm not necessarily trying to change minds as much as force people to think. But the basic philosophies behind the crossover movement is that youth sports should be about youth and not the player or the parents and the coaches' egos. I think a lot of the time it's the parents and coaches who superimpose their motivations and their beliefs of what's important onto players. I worked last week, I was coaching at a volleyball league that I run, and it was the last day, so it was just kind of, we were just kind of having a fun day, and I left it up to the different groups what they were going to do, and some of them played parents against the players, and some of them mixed players and parents together, but kind of the middle age group had three teams, and they just kind of joined their three teams together and were playing a game, one team against the other, and the parent or the coaches didn't really want to keep score, so they told the players to keep their own score, and it lasted for 3 points, and then the kids played for an hour straight. Nobody wanted to leave the court, nobody wanted to finish, they just kept playing and playing, and nobody knew what the score was. And that's kind of how I remember growing up, when I was little and we would play basketball at recess, and it wasn't a matter that the games weren't competitive, because we'd get in fights over calls, or we'd be playing to win, but nobody would ever keep an accurate score, and once we left recess, we'd go back into class, and nobody remembered who won the game. So when we were on the court, we were trying to make every play, and we were trying to win as much as possible. But once the game was over, it wasn't a big deal. And so that's what I remember about the best experiences in sports. And I think too many times now, we get these ideas of going to the AAU national tournament, or parents and our adults, we really value winning and competition and so forth, and we try to make our values very important for 8, 9, 10, 11 year old kids who aren't as obsessed with winning as the parents or the coaches, and so I think instead of trying to put adult motivations on the kids, we need to accept the kids' motivations and create leagues and create avenues for kids to play that best meet the kids' motivations, you know, and their skill level, and give them an opportunity to play, and not just create a system where, you know, as soon as a kid starts playing a sport, he's in the system of training for a professional career, even though less than, you know, 1% will ever have that opportunity. So I think we just create a system that's too competitive at too young of an age, and we drive off kids from sports a lot of times. Statistics show that 13 years old is the peak age for sports participation in the United States. So most of the, you know, kids at that age are starting to gravitate towards other things and leave sports behind. A lot of times, basically just because it's misplaced priorities or motivations. Beyond that, one of the big things that I try to focus on with the site is differentiating between a training environment and a Peak by Friday environment. Peak by Friday is a term I picked up from Dr. Isvan Bali. Basically, to characterize the type of coach who has one practice a week and then plays a game, and they spend their whole practice, you know, putting in a game plan or devising a strategy to win their next game, and not really focused on creating an environment where the players might improve. So, you know, if I have one really good player, my whole practice is geared towards how can we get him the ball and how can he get all the shots, and, you know, what defense can we run to take away their our opponent's advantage, or what press can we do to create turnovers, you know, et cetera, et cetera, as opposed to creating an environment where all the players are improving and working on their skills and having fun as part of the team. So those are kind of the two major parts of the site, and everything kind of comes back to those two points of creating a more athlete-centered environment and working on a training or a learning environment instead of a Peak by Friday environment. I haven't really faced any criticism on my site. I've seen a couple of times where I had a post on another site, and I think the comment had something to do that if people followed what I had to say, that we'd all be communists. But other than that, I haven't received, I mean, I don't know. I just haven't had many people email me to tell me I'm wrong, or, you know, that I don't know what I'm talking about. And I haven't seen many of those comments on my site. The one that sticks out was just the one comment on another forum. I didn't even post on it. Somebody else had posted a link to my book, and then somebody else posted that if we followed my book, we'd all be communists. So that's really the only criticism that I've seen, you know, directed at me. I don't know if there's others that, you know, I'm not aware of or whatever. But you know, most of the feedback I get is from coaches who agree but don't know how to change, I guess, or they feel trapped because their parents expect, you know, certain things, and they want to do it differently, but the parents expect this, and so they don't want to lose all their kids. You know, I've talked to coaches that's, you know, that's their main worry. You know, yeah, I agree that we should practice more and play fewer games, and we don't need to go to tournaments every weekend, but, you know, if I schedule practice on the weekend, a kid will just find another team to play with, and he'll go play, you know, four or five games with another team. You know, and if I keep doing it, then the player will eventually leave and join the other team. You know, those are more the comments that I get, are more that they agree with me, but they don't know how, basically how to change what they're doing. When, you know, somebody will fill the void if they try to, you know, if they try to play less or whatever, somebody will come in and fill that void and take their kids. So, you know, I guess those are the problems that people have written to me about the book or about the philosophy. but I haven't felt anything negative directed towards me.
Good. Well, I know you in the United States you have the AAU program that kind of, you know, there's been a lot of criticism put on that system in terms of how it has changed basketball development, and just what we just kind of talked about, where it's just about games. They're not practicing enough, and you know, they're the traveling, the money, the shoes, and everything. Like, so I'm not gonna, I don't want to get into that, but I wanna ask you to compare what you've seen overseas in the club system, because I'm a big believer in having the availability of club basketball as a, you know, not necessarily AAU, but club basketball, like in the European countries that you've been to, or other countries around the world where you might have been, because I've spent time in Austria and Germany and Australia. I've seen how they do it there. How do you compare the AAU and the club system, or maybe also what are your thoughts on club basketball? Do you think it could work in the States with having the traditional high school sports programs being so strong?
Well, I think the major difference isn't necessarily club versus school, but it's more... In other countries that I've seen, both being there and then also, you know, talking to coaches and reading and so forth, is the federations in most countries are very strong, whereas the federation in the United States has almost no power whatsoever. So, like, you know, when I was in Sweden, you know, the federation, if you wanted to play, you had to have a player license through that team, and so, you know, the federation would know exactly what team you played for, and you couldn't be bouncing from team to team, you know, each week, you know, and if you wanted to coach, you had to have a coach's license, you know, so they knew who was coaching the teams, you know, and so, you know, when they got to certain levels, you know, and in more basketball-oriented countries, they have better coach education programs and so forth, where, you know, coaches have to get specific licenses to coach certain age groups. So I think more so than just AAU or club or school or whatever it is, I think the major difference is just that in the United States, everything's a free-for-all because it's more or less a you know, free market economy, and it's an entrepreneurial type environment where, you know, whoever wants to start a tournament can, you know, rent a gym and start a tournament. And if you get the teams to show up, then you've got a tournament. You know, and anybody who wants to start a team can start a team, and you can go start recruiting players. Like I saw a couple posts recently talking about, hey, you know, I want to get my club team sponsored. How do I do it? And they said, go find the best players and bring them to your team, and then somebody will come and want to sponsor you. And so that's kind of what happens, you know, in the United States, because there's no kind of organizing government overseeing it. One of the things I write about in my book is, you know, USA Basketball isn't very strong, and NCAA is just strong for its purposes, and the NBA has no involvement. So there's this giant void, and the shoe companies came in and filled that void. And so now, you know, basketball development in a lot of ways. Is dependent on the shoe companies, both for the money that they give the top players and, you know, the gear and the travel to get top players so they can play against each other. You know, and the shoe companies aren't focused on, well, how can we best develop a basketball player? They're focused on how can we best market our shoes. You know, in other countries that I've seen, it's more organized from the federation level. And the federation, you know, kind of controls everything. Like, I mean, I remember when I was in Sweden, our youth kids, you know, we'd have to take like one weekend off here and there because in case any of our kids were invited to a national team camp, no teams were allowed to practice or play games on that weekend because you couldn't have a conflict between a national camp and your club. And the national programs got precedence. Well, there's no way that if, you know, the U.S. decided we wanted to have stronger under 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old teams, and we said, all right, you know, this weekend in February, no teams are allowed to play in practice, you know, in case you have an under 15-year-old you know, that's called up to a national team camp, you know, or a regional camp leading to a national camp. You know, once that kid leaves, the teams would still find a, you know, tournament to play in if they wanted to play, you know, or they'd run practices without the kid. So, you know, in other countries, it's much more centralized through the federation, you know, which creates the good and the bad, you know, but in the U.S., it's a complete free market system. So anybody can coach a team, start a program, run a camp, you know, and so there's no quality control, I guess, is the best way to say it. I think other countries will have a hard time competing with the U.S. just because of the depth of talent that comes from the amount of money spent in basketball in the United States, plus the population and the diversity of population in the United States. So I think those three things and the facilities. I mean, I walk around to gyms in my neighborhood, and they high schools have second gyms that are nicer than any court that my team in Ireland played on. You know, so you know, I think in terms, you know, there's just so much money spent in athletics in the United States, and you know, the facilities are so much better. I mean, a high school that I'm working with now, you know, they have a 3,000 square foot weight room just for the athletes, and then outside they have another like 2,000 square feet of rubber mats and plyo boxes and, you know, different things. And it's not even considered one of the best weight rooms in the area. You know, that would trump anything that I've seen in Europe. You know, and granted, I haven't been to some of the top clubs. You know, I've mainly been in lower leagues. And, you know, when I did clinics in Greece and Macedonia, we were with mainly the facilities of like second division or first division clubs. We didn't do anything with any of the top clubs like Panathinaikos or Olympiakos. You know, I mean, those kind of facilities, you know, while they can't make players by themselves, you know, between the diversity of population, you know, and the amount of resources and the money available and stuff here, there's just such an advantage for a kid coming out of the States compared to in many other places, which is why I think at the senior men's national team level, you see, you know, teams kind of closing the gap, because you only need 7 or 8 players, you know, of basically 22 to 30 years old. So you really only have to produce one good player a year. And you can have a pretty good national team. But in terms of the depth of talent, when you look at the, you know, 500th best player from Spain, you know, or the 500th best player from Lithuania, or the 500th best player from Australia, it's no comparison to the 500th best player, you know, in the United States. So I just think there's you know, such a depth that it's hard for other countries, you know, to overcome. But in the same respect, I think there are a lot of things that are done elsewhere, you know, that are, you know, better or could be incorporated by teams and programs in the United States, just because, you know, if you look at, you know, whatever country you want to look at or whatever sport that had success in this year's Olympics, it didn't happen just by accident. You know, Great Britain has invested money, you know, in resources and time into building its programs because they want to play well in 2012, and they already saw some of the benefits with their rowing program and their cycling program in the Beijing Olympics. You know, and it wasn't, you know, the athletes didn't just, you know, suddenly British athletes are better. It's that, you know, they've created a system to develop athletes to perform in the Olympics. You know, China's the same way. China has a huge population. They have a lot of advantages going for them, you know, but the sports where they really succeeded were the ones where they kind of invested the money and time and really tried to develop those athletes for those sports. You know, I mean, obviously gymnastics is the one that has been very successful for years, and also table tennis. But you know, beach volleyball on the women's side, you know, they took two medals, the silver and the bronze, and a lot of it had to do with the fact that they created a beach volleyball training center and recruited, you know, top athletes to come and train for 4 years leading up to the Olympics. You know, when you look at, you know, Hungary or Serbia are some of the best programs in water polo. It's the same thing. They value the sport heavily in that country. You know, they invest the resources into the coaching and the training, and so they're very good. Even though they have a small population, they're very good in their one or two sports. So I think all those different kind of ideas, I think you can use them and apply them to whatever sport it is that you're trying to develop. Spain, I think, is one country that they did with the age group, you know, with the Jose Calderons and the Marcus Soles and the Juan Carlos Navarros. That age group came through a player development program that they had set up and the federation organized, you know, and now they're seeing the results of their program. You know, France has a lot of players in the NBA right now, and they came through the INSEP program in France, you know, the Tony Parker and Boris Diaw and Gerbale and Johan Petro and players like that. They all came through the INSEP program, you know, where they basically recruited or identified and evaluated players and then brought them into a systematic program where they, you know, got the best coaches and the best training, and they developed, you know, their 8 to 10 really good players. And so I think all those ideas can be used, you know, and that's one of the things that my website hopes to do, is to expose people to read the website to, you know, more information from outside the country, and also from what good programs here are doing. I'm waiting on an interview from a guy I think is probably the best high school coach in California, that should be up hopefully next week. You know, so I'm trying to get information both from coaches here and coaches abroad, so that coaches can use all the information and try to, you know, take something, you know, what's one thing that Lithuania is doing really well to be able to compete at the international level, even though their population is whatever, 3 or 4 million, you know, and what's Spain doing that they can compete, even though soccer is still the most popular sport in Spain, you know, and what are the British cyclists doing that they can come out of nowhere and dominate cycling at the 2008 Olympics? You know, so I'm trying to accumulate all this information on my site, so the coaches can take, you know, bits and pieces, and they can learn from different systems and different sports, and apply it to what they're trying to do.
Well, I think that's what you're doing is fantastic, and you know, if you're not doing it, somebody has to do it. And the one constant there that you mentioned, I think, is really important is money. It takes money, it takes resources, and those resources need funds to pay for it. And that's in Canada. I'm up in Canada here, and I know that that's an issue with our national team. We have a lot of great athletes. We've had a lot of success in the past in Olympic basketball and world international basketball, but that's faded over the last maybe 15, 20 years, unfortunately. And really, from my conversations with people that know, it's about money. And the national teams just do not have the budgets. They cannot train full-time year-round. And then also the development programs that you mentioned, which are crucial. They're trying to get those going. There's a national development team now in Canada, and they're trying. Nike's putting a little bit of money. And I don't know if the Toronto Raptors are involved with any of the youth grassroots development, but it does come down to money. And unless you can get the funds to develop these athletes and players and train them properly in the fundamentals and make sure they're having fun when they're young, and that's where you need the best coaches, is with the youngest players, I believe. Without that money, it's not going to happen. And that's why I think it's really interesting what you're doing, looking at all the other countries, how they're doing it, especially with, like Lithuania, with, like you mentioned, 3 to 4 million people. So I think that's great. That's why I love reading all your stuff on your websites and the interviews and everything. And hopefully this interview that we're doing now, people will learn something from this, and we can, you know, keep the game growing. So The next thing I wanted to ask you about is the one of the programs that you have is called the 180 Shooter Training Program. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what that means. And you know, the website that you have is really good. You can check and see if you are a 180 shooter. Coaches, you can ask the coaches can see if their team was a 180 shooting team. And you have a book for sale there. And maybe you can talk about the website and then what really a 180 shooter means.
All right. Well, 180 shooter comes from if you add your 2-point shooting percentage, your 3-point shooting percentage, and your free throw percentage. A good measure for that would be a 180 shooter. Last year in the NBA, there were 5 180 shooters. If you want to find out who they are, you can go to the website 180shooter.com. But the real basis behind the program is, I looked at what I did with a couple of the kids. Who I worked with over a long period of time, and why did some of them with the same instruction really improve, and why did some of them with the same exact instruction and relatively the same amount of time on the court, why did some of them, only moderately improve? And I looked back at kind of the first kid that I really trained was a kid named Matt Glenn, that I worked with when he was a freshman at UC Santa Cruz. I was the assistant coach straight out of college. And basically my real role on the team was working with him and then doing a little bit of the ball handling stuff during practice. But mainly I worked out every day with Glenn basically because he wanted to. The head coach almost cut him at the beginning of the year. So we worked out every day. He broke his hand at the beginning of the year, his left hand. As we started out, he decided as long as he was injured, as soon as he injured himself, he thought he was going to take a red shirt for that year and not play at all. So he wanted to dedicate himself to relearning how to shoot because in high school he was a poor to mediocre shooter. When I was developing the 180 Shooter program, the 180 Shooter book, which I wrote first, is basically everything that I do with a player and why I do it. And it's, laid out and basically in 5 steps, to take a player from from beginning shooting all the way up to what you're going to have to do, to be able to shoot in a high school, college, or pro game. And so when I looked at what we did with him and why he had so much success, he ended up being a Division III All-American. And his senior year of college, he was a 180 shooter. He shot, I think, 92% from the line, about 50% from 2-point range and 50% from 3-point range. So he ended up a really good shooter. And the difference between what he did and what a lot of the kids I work with do isn't anything that I do differently, it's what he did differently. And what he did was he would write down, and in the middle of our workout, after each set of drills that we would do, he would write down how many he made and how many he missed. So he was keeping track in his head of every shot he took. And then after every 10 shots or so, he would, or 10 to 20 shots, he would go and he would write it down. And he kept a notebook. And so throughout the whole year, he had every single workout that he did on his own or that we did together, he had it all in a notebook. He could tell you on any given day what shots he took, how many he made, how many he missed, etc. And so to me, that more than anything is the biggest reason why he improved so much. One, it shows the level of dedication that he had. But two, he held himself accountable and he was able to see his progress over time. That, at the beginning he was only shooting, 15-foot shots, and he was only getting up 100 in the workout because he was shooting with one hand, and by the end of the year, he could see that he was getting up, in an hour workout, he was getting up, 300 to 400 shots, and he was shooting 3-pointers, and so he's extending his range, and he was making more shots, and so he was able to see all this in his notebook. Basically, I took that idea and wrote a computer program based on the book and that idea of of tracking shots.
Are you some sort of genius?
Am I a genius? I didn't actually do the computer part. I had the idea and I wrote the program, and then I had somebody do the HTMLing or whatever you do to actually code the stuff. So that's basically the idea behind the practice part or the player part, is to just get players to write down what they're doing at practice and then take it to the computer. And then if you, let's say you practice for 30 days in a row, you know, and you can see visually there's a, you know, it'll take the drills and put it on a court so that you can see exactly where all your shots are coming from and what your shooting percentage is in a different area of the court. So if I do, you know, put in, let's say I do 10 drills for 30 days, you know, they're going to give me those 10 drills. I might shoot shots from different parts of the court, and it's going to come in. I can see maybe that I'm shooting, you know, 20% from the three-point range, but I'm shooting 70% from two-point range. You know, or I can see that in the middle of the court, I'm shooting 50%, but in the corners, I'm shooting 30%. You know, or I can see that, you know, I'm shooting 50% off shots off the dribble, but on shots off the catch, I'm only shooting 30%. So I can measure all these things, and I can see it both visually and text in the program. And then the part where it was actually designed to help was to be a coach's program. So the shot tracker part is for a coach to be able to do the same thing both with his players' practice and with his players or with game shooting. So if I take, and it allows you to do it for any kind of game, whether it's a practice scrimmage or a preseason game or a real game. So if I, let's say, I have my team scrimmages today at practice, I can keep a shot chart, or I have my assistant coach keep a shot chart of where they're shooting from, make some misses, et cetera. I can put it into the computer, and I can see, you know, where my team's shooting well from. I can see that, wow, we're taking all of our shots in the middle of the court. We need to do a better job. Or we're taking 80% of our shots from the right side of the court. You know, we need to do a better job, you know, swinging the ball to the left side and getting the ball to the weak side. You know, I can see all these things visually on the court. And then I can also use my players' practice records with their game shooting. So I can see that, you know, let's say I have a kid and he's shooting, you know, 20% from the corners. I can look at his practice, bring up his practice chart, and see that he hasn't practiced a shot in the corners, you know, all summer. You know, so then I can say, well, look, you know, if you're not going to practice the shot, you know, don't take it in the game, or we're not going to run a play, you know, or put you in a position to take shots that you're not practicing. Program is designed to allow a coach to do all these kinds of things, and also, you know, to get their players, you know, really trying to focus in on their practice, by making players charts. So if I'm not, let's say, if the rules prohibit me from working with my own kids during the off season, you know, I can have them chart their practice so that I can see what they're doing each and every day. I've talked to my friends here, a trainer in LA, now going to use the program with his players, same idea, so that, you know, if they come and they work out with him one day a week, he can chart their workouts that they're doing on their own. You can see, hey, you know, this kid's never practicing on his own. I'm not going to work out with him anymore. You know, I'm not going to invite him to my clinics anymore because he obviously doesn't have the level of dedication that one should have if they're using an individual trainer. Or they can see, okay, you know, during his shooting workouts this week, you know, he was only shooting off the dribble. So at our workout on group workout, we're going to do all our shots, you know, off the catch. You know, we're going to practice things that he's not practicing on his own. So there's a ton of different uses. It's a pretty simple program to use, but there's a ton of different things that, you know, a coach or a trainer or a player can kind of pick up and, you know, you could do it on your own, you know, flipping through your notebook and saying, yeah, I did this drill, you know, seven times in a row and trying to calculate everything yourselves. But the program's designed to do all that kind of work for you and put it up visually so that you can track your shots. You buy your memberships, you can track every shot that you shoot for a year. You know, in a year from now, you can figure out that you are a 67% shooter for an entire year and you shot 10,000 shots in practice. you know, and you can figure out exactly where you shot all 10,000 shots, you know, and you can have it at your fingertips, you know, within a second, as opposed to having to try to keep track of, you know, 100 or 200 pages of notebook paper.
How have the sales been? Have you been doing well? I mean, getting the word out? Nobody yet?
No, that's my problem. I'm a terrible businessman. I have great ideas, but not good at business. So it has helped. My sales of my book have increased from where they were before I started the site. But the program package for coaches isn't selling as well as I would like. The practice tracker program for players is selling about what I expected. The book is selling more than I expected. But I haven't been able to convince the coaches of its value so far. But
hopefully we can get some people going to your site to buy this from you know, after listening to this. What is the site that they go to again?
It's 180shooter.com. The numeral is 180 and then shooter, shooter.com.
Excellent. Okay, well, the next thing I want to ask you about, we got about 10 minutes left. I want to ask you about something that I'm a big believer in, and it's written about on your Crossover Movement website, and it's free play, playing you know, multiple sports to build athleticism. I know when I was a kid, same kind of thing that you did when you were younger. We just went and played. We didn't really keep score that much. We played. I would play in elementary school or primary school. I would be playing. I remember volleyball, indoor soccer, outdoor soccer, badminton, floor hockey, ice hockey, baseball. I played everything. And I know that really helped me as an athlete growing up because there is definitely a crossover from one sport to the other in terms of different hand-eye skills and footwork skills and everything like that. What is your take on it and why do you feel it's important?
For the same things that you mentioned and some of the same things I talked about before, I think just letting kids play is important because, you know, when you look at why kids want to engage in an activity, the two main reasons that young people have for playing sports are social reasons and then also achievement. They want to learn and they want to get better at doing something. And a lot of times in structured sports, we lose those two things, you know. So, you know, we're constantly telling kids, no, don't talk to your teammate. You know, you pay attention when I'm talking. You know, pay attention. So you're trying to lose that kind of socialness of sports, you know. And it's supposed to be serious, and you know, you have to take the drill serious and do exactly what I say. You know, a lot of times that kind of prohibits learning as well, because you know, to learn something, you have to make mistakes over and over. And like you were saying earlier, you know, when you have a you know, really authoritarian coach who's yelling and, you know, talking about how serious and how well we have to do things, you know, you kind of tense up. You don't want to make the mistake. And so you don't go outside your comfort zone to try something new. When you go out on your own and you play, you know, in your backyard or if you play at the park, you know, it's a free environment and you feel comfortable trying something new. So maybe you shoot a little bit beyond your shooting range, you know, to try to extend your range, or, you know, you work on a new ball handling move that you haven't perfected yet, or, you know, whatever the case may be. I mean, when I was little, I'd go out in my front yard, you know, and I would take whatever I saw on television, you know, watching an NBA game or, you know, whatever, and I would take it out to my front yard and I would practice it until I could do it. You know, but I had to make a lot of mistakes first. So I remember my mom came home one time and her best friend had a son who was 4 years older than me. And so she had been over and I think she had seen play somewhere. And so she came home and told me, you know, I think I was like in second or third grade. And she said, you know, yeah, he's dribbling through his legs on every dribble kind of thing, which today for today's kids is nothing. But that back then, people didn't work on ball handling as much and it was more of a big deal. So I know I went out and I did it. And I did it for like an hour and I mastered it and then I could do it. But if it had been a structured practice, you know, with a coach and the coach telling me I have to do this and I have to do that, I may, one, not have had the opportunity to learn such a drill, and two, I might have been a little bit more timid when learning because I was scared to make a mistake because I didn't want the coach, you know, to play me or to play me less or to think that I couldn't handle the ball or, you know, whatever the case may be. I just think that we lose a lot by forcing kids into so much competitive and structured play and not allowing kids kind of to develop on their own and to learn on their own. And we also take away the social aspects of it too. You know, when you go out and you play with, you know, you're 10 years old and you go out and you play with your friends and you learn how to work out, you know, and settle arguments and differences of opinions and, you know, how to play without a ref and, you know, get along and, you know, all these kind of social skills that people need to develop that, you know, these days, you know, kids aren't exposed to those kind of opportunities because the coach is there to settle everything and the coach blows the whistle on a foul and the coach restarts everything. And, you know, everything is based on the coach being in control. And so kids never have that opportunity to kind of, you know, develop the leadership skills and the conflict mediation type skills that came naturally, you know, generations ago. One of the comments that I got most frequently when I first published the book is, you know, I agreed with you. You know, I went to practice today and I said, okay, I'm going to let my players play. I'm just going to sit back. I'm not going to control them. I'm just going to give them the ball, you know, tell them to play 5-on-5, make their own teams, et cetera, et cetera. And I literally had a half a dozen coaches in the first month or two that the book was published say, look, I tried this free play stuff, but the players just looked at each other. They didn't know what to do. You know, and it's because, you know, when you've got kids who have started in structured sports since they're 8 years old, and everything has been focused on the coach, you know, doing this and the coach doing that and the parent driving you there and the coach telling you and the coach telling you, you know, when you get 18-year-old kids, you know, you can't just expect them to change at the snap of a finger. So, you know, that's another thing that I talk about on the site and in my book is empowerment coaching. And you know, even when the coach is involved, trying to get them to give the players a little bit of control and encourage players asking questions and trying to encourage leadership skills by the players and giving them choices as opposed to everything being, you know, communication going one direction where it's the coach always talking to the players, and it's more of a two-way street where coaches ask questions of the players and players ask questions of the coaches, and there's more communication going on both ways. You know, and then in terms of playing multiple sports, you know, I'm all for that. I, like you said, I think it helps develop different athletic traits that athletes can bring. Then when they get older and ultimately specialize in one sport, the broad foundation that they have from playing different sports, it can only help them. I know when I coach or train players, you know, I always like to find out what other sports they play with or they play. And I use that when I train a player and, you know, cause I can relate to when I'm teaching something and I say, you know, when you're a running back and you're running through the hole, how, you know, where's your posture? You know, well, that's how you want to be when you're beating a defender off the dribble, or, you know, when you're setting or when you're going up the block in volleyball, you know, how are you jumping? Well, it's the same idea as when you're trying to block a shot in basketball, you know, and stuff like that. So you can use, you know, the concepts and the skills, you know, they transfer from sport to sport, you know, so you can use different things when you know what sports players play and what their skills are in other sports. You can use their strengths to help them understand things that they might not, you know, be doing successfully in the sport that they're coaching.
I think it's funny that you mentioned that about the free play and not knowing what to do, you know, like the players looking at the coach. I remember when I was in Australia and we were always trying to encourage kids that just came to the gym, when they would come and they didn't have a structured practice because they grow up kind of the same way with a lot of coaching and structured practices, I'd say, well, why don't you guys just play 2-on-2 or 3-on-3? And they didn't really know what to do. They didn't know how to play 3-on-3 and 2-on-2. They didn't know how to just play pickup basketball. And it was, you know, when I grew up, and I'm sure you the same way, the way that you really improve, and probably the best players in the world are the ones that play a lot of pickup basketball, free play basketball, where they're just playing and trying new things. There's no coaches. These guys didn't know what to do. And we had to really always emphasize and try to explain and teach to them, well, this is how you play. You just play, you keep scoring, you have fun. But it's so funny that certain generations or certain places in the world, they just don't know how to do that. So I think that's something that we have to constantly remind coaches and players to do, is just, you don't need don't even need a ball, really. But if you had a basket and a ball, you can just play on your own. And I shot thousands of shots when I was a kid by myself, doing the same thing that you said you did with your dribbling for an hour until you mastered it. And I think that's so important. Brian, any last words before we wrap it up? I know that I really want to thank you, first of all, for everything so far that we've talked about. I think it's been great. I want to give you the last word, and then we'll just wrap it up. I know you're going to a fight tonight. You're going to watch a fight, Ultimate Fighting. I know there's a little bit of crossover training there, kickboxing and boxing.
Yeah, I got to go watch Uriah Faber. He's from Sacramento, too, and I used to work out at his gym. So he's defending his WEC title tonight, so I got to go watch that. But, just thanks for the opportunity to come on and talk to you, and I enjoyed it. And my websites, once again, are 180shooter.com. All my books are available as ebooks through the site as well, in the store part of the 180 Shooter site. And then my information site, I guess, is the Crossover Movement, all spelled out. And that has all my writing about, early specialization and different basketball systems around the world, and athletic development and player development and coach education, and a variety of different topics. Thanks
great.
Again.
The Hard to Guard newsletter, I want you to mention that too.
Oh, yeah.
I love reading it. Maybe talk about where people can go subscribe to that.
Sure. Actually, now if you go to 180shooter.com, you can subscribe through that site as well. Or you can email me at hardtoguardinc@yahoo.com. It's H-A-R-D, the numeral 2, G-U-A-R-D-I-N-C @yahoo.com. Newsletter, I send it out every week. And it's geared towards kind of things that parents and players and coaches can use to help players get better. Interviews occasionally with different people. I know in the past I've interviewed Joe Carbone, who's Kobe Bryant's trainer. This week I interviewed a guy who just started a gym, talked to him about different issues of coaching kids in their growth spurt and some things like that. Trying to get a nutrition interview with a college sports nutritionist, because I get some questions about nutrition as well. So, and then it's got my writing and talking about my perspectives on training basketball players and player development in general.
Well, I do really enjoy reading that, and I know sometimes there's so much information in there that I can't even read them all, but it's good stuff for those of you that are listening. If you want to learn, if you're passionate about youth sports and changing your thinking in terms of the crossover movement, I think the book is fantastic. I mean, I haven't read the book, but the website I've seen is fantastic. I'm going to get a copy of the book. I'm going to read it because it is a passion. Bob Bigelow, the same sort of philosophy. Brian Grasso, I'm not sure if you're aware of him, who's also a really good youth trainer and strength and conditioning guy. All of these guys, Brian McCormick, with his websites and information, for those of you that are listening, there's no excuse not to start changing, shifting your paradigm or your focus on how you deal with these young kids, because they're not adults and they can't be coached that way. So, Brian, once again, thank you. Hopefully we can do this again. We've been on for an hour. It's flown by. As usual, the time flies when you're having an interesting conversation. So have a good time watching the fight tonight, and hopefully we'll have you again on soon.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. We'll be here next time. Keep the emails coming in, and be sure to subscribe.